I'm very, very fortunate in that I'm able to marry two things that so many people love, each of them, and so many people love both of them. So being in the middle of all of that, it's really unique. And you know, there's something about music that just, it moves people in ways that, and so does sports, you know? I mean, both of those have such passion behind them.
So Brandon, so thank you for coming out, man. I'm really excited about today's episode because we're gonna be talking about a lot of different things. One of them is like managing large projects, managing large teams, but two topics that a lot of people really enjoy, which is sports and music.
Yeah.
And so anybody that has ever been to a sporting event has probably seen a concert and seen your work.
I hope so. I hope they come out when we're there.
So yeah. Tell me your story. How'd you get started in all this?
Yeah, well, so going way back, I used to work for the Detroit Lions. And so we used to do the Thanksgiving Day halftime show. I was involved with it from the team side. So just from a basic knowledge of, we could get a stage out there and have a show. That was kind of the first part of it. I knew logistically we could pull it off. And then when I went to the Braves, so I was at the Lions for I think 9 years, and then I went to the Braves and they wanted to do a similar thing, but make it more of a ticket driver and have it after the game. So now instead of just a halftime show, which is really entertainment, it's not really meant to sell tickets.
Right.
Nobody's going because of a 5 minute halftime show. But if you put a post game concert in and it's a full show, then you hope people sometimes would just buy a ticket just to come for the concert.
Interesting.
Obviously you want them to see both.
Yeah.
But it gives you an opportunity to expose your product to new fans. Maybe they come back one or two, they're not gonna turn into season ticket holders the next day.
Right.
But maybe they say, hey, that wasn't so bad. The parking wasn't bad, all the bad things they might have heard. And then it gives the opportunity for, like, the Braves to have an amazing game entertainment department.
So there's two separate events.
That's right. Yeah. It's one ticket, though. But, you know, you get them in the building and you show them what the game looks like. And maybe they're not baseball fans, but they have such a great time. Maybe they come back to a couple more. But in the immediate, you want to try to sell some of those tickets that might have gone unsold otherwise. So it's both the entertainment and hopefully you're moving tickets as well.
So they're buying one ticket for the game.
Yeah.
And then they also get access to the concert afterwards.
Correct.
So that's a win-win, really.
Yeah, it's a win-win. Yeah. And really, it comes down to an economic thing, too, because if you go to, you know, we've had Sam Hunt and Chris Stapleton, those types of guys, you're looking at, man, a $65, if not a lot more, for just the concert ticket.
Right.
And in baseball, they have tickets as cheap as $12 or $15. I mean, obviously, you can get nicer ones and spend more money, but it becomes such a value proposition of now you're getting a full concert and a baseball game for $15,
oh, wow,
if you want,
yeah,
you know, and then even when the concert starts, anybody that leaves, you can move closer. And so it's really for a value for the fan of the artist or the team or both, it's a great setup.
That's
they
awesome.
Just can't get that for,
yeah.
I mean, can't go to a fast food place, yeah, and not spend $15 anymore. So
two for one, like so, and,
right,
and like what you mentioned before. I mean, I guess a lot of times, you know, people that may not even be sports fans, they're,
right,
witnessing a game, and then they might start following the team with,
yeah,
the excitement. So
and the flip,
yeah,
for the artist too,
right,
because now they're getting the exposure to that team's,
right,
fan base, and the marketing that goes behind that, and all this, all of a sudden that helps them in the area regionally a little bit better too.
Right.
So hopefully next time they come through, they can play a little bit bigger building,
right,
or, you know, sell a few more tickets.
And
at least people know their name a little bit more. So
yeah,
not like, you know, Chris Stapleton, people kind of know who he is, but it always helps. I mean,
yeah,
it's never a bad idea to get a lot more marketing like that.
Yeah, so Lions, Braves. We're
so after the Braves, during the Braves, I guess I should say, I had a lot of teams calling and saying, hey, we see what you're doing. We see that this has been successful. And every team across baseball or college football or anywhere, they're trying to figure out how to sell tickets. Mm-hmm. Because the in-home experience is becoming such a high quality with the level of the broadcast and all that. And some people would rather just sit on their couch.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody's trying to sell tickets. And I was getting calls from all these other teams saying, hey, you know, could you tell us what you're doing?
Mm-hmm.
Could you tell us how you're doing it? And of course, said I don't want to,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But it became enough of a demand, and I felt so good about what we're doing and the and just the model in general, and knowing the success we've had, I kind of took the leap. And it was 2015, and that year we had Sam Hunt coming through, And it was when Sam Hunt was just exploding, mm-hmm. and the tickets that day were really, really, really strong. Mm-hmm. So I knew I could take some of that data and say, hey, you know, other teams around baseball, this works. It works. And we've done, you know, at that point, maybe we had done 40 of these shows. So I had a lot of backing to know that it worked. Mm-hmm. And then now we have that year. It was the Reds and the Phillies that jumped on board, and so I'll forever be grateful to them. Mm-hmm. But really, the Braves stayed on board, and Derek Schiller, who's now the president, and Scott mm-hmm. Cunningham were instrumental in saying, you know, when I told him I wanted to leave, yeah. it was kind of like, what? You know, yeah, what are you thinking? Because I had a great setup, I had a great job there, but I just knew there was demand. But they said, we're gonna stay with you, you know, we're gonna see you through this. And so it was a big transition, but having those two guys and then the new two teams jump on board, it meant everything. Yeah. It meant everything. And now we're 7 or 8 baseball teams around MLB, college football, we're doing some NFL, we're doing college basketball.
Did you get into the whole like Super Bowl type stuff?
Well, so my background, I'd worked on a couple Super Bowls, more in the like the trophy mm-hmm. staging ceremony type stuff after, or some of the events yeah. surrounding. So I had a little bit of that kind of experience. But yeah, so we did the World Series this year. And we did it 2 years ago because our stage, although it's designed to carry tens of thousands of pounds of equipment, mm-hmm. We know that players can get on top of it without a problem. And it won't damage the field, it'll be out there quick, all that stuff. So we've done the World Series and the ALCS. And mm-hmm. so there's kind of been an interesting spinoff with the business too, yeah. away from the concerts and just doing the staging. Because again, it gets out there quick and it protects the field. And mm-hmm. and we know that 300-pound guys can go up on top of it and jump around, and we're going to be safe.
Right, right. So in leadership, sometimes you have more of like a visionary CEO, but more of a strategic CEO, like implementing stuff. Where would you fall?
Oh, man. So, you know, to be honest, we're a real, real small shop, so yeah. you've kind of got to be all of it. You've got to be, because at the end of the day, when we go out and try to sell something, if we're out talking to a team, there's kind of, unfortunately, nobody that knows the business better than I do. So
you came up with this whole concept.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's just, how do we keep that going? And when we talk to people, is it who's putting together the marketing and who's approaching teams and who's, you know, trying to sell it, and then who's producing it and who's yeah. putting it together? I'm handling that. And then I have a genius, I'll use that phrase, and probably even light at that point, that handles the production side. Rob Wilson does all of our, and you could take the craziest stuff and throw it at him and say, hey, we want to put a stage, you know, behind this table yeah. and, you know, have it be big enough for the band. And he'd figure it out.
Wow.
He'd figure it out. So yeah. he's, I mean, absolutely instrumental in making these things come together, because every stadium's so different.
Right.
They might have a 8-foot tunnel we've got to come out of,
right.
which is almost impossible.
Yeah.
You throw that at Rob. Yeah. There's so much. There's so much.
Behind
it.
Like,
yeah.
So let's talk about that. Like, so how, what is the process? Like, how do you,
yeah.
like, how do you plan a massive event like that?
Yeah. So, you know, it starts with getting a team to buy in first, and then you get into, all right, now that you want to give it a shot, what artists are we looking at? And so we'll try to find a genre. You know, what are they trying to accomplish? Because some teams really do just want to entertain kind of their current fan base. So that falls in a different bucket than if we're trying to attract new fans. Mm-hmm. So, you know, are we going after classic rock, which maybe is in baseball what they're already have in their building, or are we going after something a little bit more, I mean, we had Zedd and Diplo and Steve Aoki in some of these shows recently, and obviously that's not your standard season ticket holder, that's trying to attract a new fan base. So
right.
we go through that process and we find an artist, and then it's the whole put an offer in and hoping they do it, and, you know, trying to convince them, because that's the other part too. These artists are worried about their own brand.
Right.
They have a way that the show has to look and feel and sound. Mm-hmm. And so we've got to make sure that they're comfortable saying, hey, we can do this, mm-hmm. and it's going to sound great, it's going to look great, it's going to be different, but at the end, they always walk away happy. So we've got to convince them. Once we get them going, then it's on the team really kind of handles the marketing of the show and all that, which is nice because, you know, they have the assets, they
yeah.
have the resources. And then putting it together, that's where my production manager really jumps in. And he'll go in and we'll do the site visit and we'll look around and say, how in the world are we going to make this work? Yeah. It seems impossible. And he says, great, I love that type of vibe. And then he'll figure something out.
So is it a massive crew that you have, or is it just like far as like setting it up and labors and stuff
like
that?
So when we come in to do the actual gig, we'll have 30 or more folks that we'll bring together.
But
a lot of them are locally. We'll pull some like stage hands to do this, to do the show, to build our stage and to put everything together. But we have kind of a good camp of a good number of folks that have done these with us. I mean, I think we've done 100 or so now at this point. And a lot of them have been with us on a good majority of those shows. So they kind of understand, because this is a different from the production side too. If you're an audio guy or a lighting guy or whatever, this is a different vibe that too.
Yeah.
So it's good to have the repetition because they get it. They know what they're getting themselves
into. Yeah, and that's funny because I work, when I'm working on a production, a lot of times it's not the same person. Like an audio guy on a movie set is going to be different than a live audio. Way different skill sets.
Yeah.
So looking for that right person.
Yeah, and it's just because it's a tough environment, to be honest with you. It's not like going to do a regular, like, love Chastain, but compared to our shows, that's really easy. They go in, a lot of the stuff's already there. The stage is already there. You know, they're not building a stage from nothing.
Right.
And they don't have to have the show up and running in 15 minutes from grass, right? So that's the challenge. And so you've got to have a really unique person because they have to troubleshoot so fast.
Right.
If anything's wrong, or as you're wheeling the stuff out, if a little wire comes untangled, you've got to know what you're looking at, what you're seeing, and what you're not seeing, and what that might be. And that's where I have people that are smart. I don't handle that stuff. I have super smart people handling the super smart stuff, and I'm making sure that the the hot dogs are still warm and catering.
It fascinates me because like literally you're putting up this entire set, everything being built within 15 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just kind of mind blowing. I mean, does your team like have any type of like rehearse? Like, can they rehearse this? I mean, because
You really, I mean, I would love to do about 30 of them before every show, but we get usually one sound check. So we get one time to roll out there, and that's it. So there are other, like in Super Bowl, when you do the Super Bowl halftime and the Pro Bowl halftimes and stuff, I mean, it's every night you're out there 2, 3, 4 times and just tightening it up. Because when you're on national TV too, you only have a few minutes to set everything up, so it has to be just precise and clockwork. Ours, not that we want to be fast, but we don't have that luxury to roll out there a million times. Plus, we've got to protect the playing surface. You know, they've got to play baseball probably the next day.
Right.
If not, we're going to do a sound check in the morning. They're going to play that night, so you can't have any idea that we were there when we roll off, because if you leave some rut or whatever, and a $20 million a year guy breaks his ankle, God forbid. I mean, it's real, though.
Right.
So we can't have that type of effect. So yeah, we get one shot at it usually. Sometimes we can't because there might be weather, and then you're really winging it.
Yeah.
But we're usually out there and hooked up and powered up in 12 to 14 minutes, and then we kind of turn it over to the band and we wait for them to give us the all clear, and that's usually another 10 minutes or so. But 20, 25 minutes, we go from nothing to a show.
So I could just see, like, that's got to be a lot of pressure, you know? I mean, such a short time, lots of moving parts. And I know that, you know, there's a lot of people that watch the show that, you know, they're managing and they're under a lot of pressure. How do you deal with some of that stress and some of that pressure? What works for you?
It's tough, and it's I think the best thing that you can do, well, you've got to be organized, you got to be prepared. You got to be prepared for all the stuff you know is going to happen so you can handle the stuff that you don't know is coming. So just over doing the rundowns and every minute and timing it all out as best you can. Because you've got to know where your gaps are too. You know, you've got to know you've got 5 minutes here that if the world's on fire over here, you know you can step away for a second and deal with it. But it's also kind of letting everybody know right up front what they're getting into. You know, I kind of always say to our crew before, if they haven't been on a gig, it's like, I'm going to say things loudly, and it's not because I'm mad, it's because I want you to hear me.
You know? Right.
Because you've got 50,000 people or whatever, you know, and they've got to hear you, but sometimes I might be a little, a little amped up too. But you know, as long as they know what they're getting into, because they really aren't, to your point, you don't get to rehearse it.
Right.
You don't get to do it 10 times.
Right.
We get to do it once, And sometimes that's not even a true rehearsal. It's more just to go out there and do the sound check.
So preparation in your line of work is
everything.
Crucial. Yeah, it's funny. Speaking of sports, my old football coach used to say, "Proper prior prevention prevents piss poor performance."
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So like you can never prepare enough and try to, you know, especially if you only have one shot at rehearsal.
Yeah.
You can't
even
like do like a whole dress rehearsal multiple times. So.
Yeah, and sometimes it's not even the same people that are helping us pull out, or maybe we don't have all the equipment that will necessarily, meaning, you know, we'll have like tractors pull us sometimes to pull pieces of stage at. Maybe we'll only have one tractor for the sound check because it's doing other stuff. They're doing, you know, grounds work on the field or whatever. So yeah, sometimes we get a shot at it, but it's maybe not even real.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of a piece of it. So yeah, it's all the stuff we can do. It's the advance. Mm-hmm. Everything's in the advance, and you try to advance as much stuff as you can, and then hope that it all falls in line. So
keep the fingers crossed.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So you've done a lot of these projects. What was the most intricate? What was your most like your favorite one that you pulled off?
Man, intricate. Start there. Probably some of these EDM shows that we've done with Zedd and Diplo and Aoki, because they're so production driven, and they just like, if you've ever been to an EDM festival, I mean, the production it's amazing, and the things that they're doing, because they're not really, they are performing in a way, but much of their performance is more of a show than it is them playing a guitar like a traditional artist. So if that look and feel and sound isn't right, it's really a whole presentation. So to have that all be on the fly with a video wall and CO2 hits and some pyro and all, you know, that's a lot more than we're typically doing if, you know, like a Chris Stapleton type who's just going out there and playing a guitar, which is awesome. It's just a whole different vibe. So there's that, and Chris probably is, it's kind of the benchmark for what I think our success would look like. The day that we had him, I would have guessed, I mean, I'm sure you could run the analytics a million different ways, but if we didn't have Chris, there would have been maybe 20 to 23,000 people in the building that day. Mm-hmm. It was a Sunday, it was during holiday weekend, it was a tough day anyway, which is still a good crowd, but we had a little over 52,000 that day. Right. And that's when Chris was really exploding too. So we caught him at the right time, all that kind of stuff, which I'd like to think there's a lot of research that goes into that, but there's a little luck too. Mm-hmm. So that one was, and that was my first year on my own.
Oh, wow.
So it was nice, and it was here.
Yeah.
It was in Atlanta with the Braves. So it was nice that they said, hey, we're going to support you. And it was great to deliver for like the first show. Oh, here's Chris Stapleton.
So was that like somebody that they said, we would love to have it, and you went out and got it? Or how did that come about?
Yeah, so usually it's... I'll do all the research and give them every bit of information I can. Mm-hmm. And I'll really try to say, hey, this one, there's somebody like Chris Stapleton, there's somebody like Sam Hunt that you really don't have to sell too hard internally, because it's country, it's Atlanta, Georgia.
Right.
I mean,
right.
You know, it works.
Yep.
Some of the ones that are a little more difficult are the Zedds of the world. Mm-hmm. And I've been trying to get an EDM artist in one of these ballparks for 5 or 6 years. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, you run into brick walls because they're like, the folks making the decision, they're baseball people. They're very good at handling baseball things. This is a whole different world.
Right.
And finally, once they saw it, they're like, all right, let's give it a shot. And then it's great. The energy's great and all that.
But yeah.
It's tough sometimes. So you go through that and you give them the information. You hope that you can get them to see where you're coming from, because you're still selling at that point. Mm-hmm. Because if it doesn't work, and if it's a flop and nobody stays for the show or nobody comes because of the show, you could potentially lose some shows down the line because of it. So you're always keeping their best interest. The better that they do, the better we do.
Right.
So we want tickets to fly out the door.
And I think, and it's just like the same in the movie business, like having talent and knowing their market, right?
Mm-hmm.
And knowing what type of crowd that talent's gonna draw. So like obviously in the movie business, depending on the genre, I pick and choose talent based on I know what their market is and I know what type of butts they're putting in seats, right?
Yeah.
What the type of genre that their audience like seeing them in. So if it marries up to the right project, so it sounds like it's the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, the sporting event, where the sporting event, what team it is, what their audience is, or even not speaking directly to their audience, but attracting outside audience that they might have never had before.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, it's all about ROI at the end of the day. You want the team, what we hope, if their goal is return on investment, that we give them an artist that they spend X and we get them back more than that, right? That's the goal. And you've got to know the market, exactly what you're saying. It's Walk the Moon we had up in Cincinnati. They're from the area. It was a great fit.
Right.
I don't know that it would have been okay somewhere else, but if we took them into Philadelphia, if we had them here, they would have been fine. They would have been good. They wouldn't have been what they were in Cincinnati. You've got that hometown draw. So it's understanding that market, you know, and understanding what the fans are going to be excited to see. And it's tricky. It's tricky because every market's very different. Some are similar in different ways, but everybody has their nuances.
Yeah, so. I you know, it's funny because I don't think some of these fans probably don't even realize like what goes into it, just making that happen.
Yeah,
you know, they just they see the show and you know it's a good show, but the whole behind the scenes of really what it takes from right down to knowing your market and building based off of that, and let alone building an entire set and stage within 15 minutes just, you know.
Yeah, and so, you know, that process starts, like we've got, I would say 12 of our shows already booked for 2020. So, and they've been on the books for a little bit. So you've got to get way ahead of it, because the earlier you get ahead of it, the better pick you're going to have with the artist too.
Right.
But then that becomes knowing who's going to have new stuff coming out and who's should be on the rise and who's going to be available. And then, you know, there's a lot of different
the stars
puzzles.
Aligning. Yeah. That's what
and
I
then
always
can
say.
You get a routed date? And, you know, it's all these little things that you try to put together this puzzle. Mm-hmm. And it's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough. So it's nice to put a bunch of them to bed before the holidays
yeah.
And then, you know, jump back into it, because everybody in sports and in music kind of checks out for a couple of weeks, which is good because they all work so hard all the way through the year. So, but the holidays, everybody shuts down.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah. Same thing in Hollywood.
Yeah. It's everybody's like, I need 2 weeks to recuperate at least, you know, if not a month.
Yeah.
So,
but. That's cool. So, so what, you know, you're working with the sports teams. And music, the music, is there, do you pick a side? Like, what do you like one or the other?
Oh, man, you know, so I worked in sports in front offices for close to 20 years. I grew up in that environment. I love sports. I played everything I could get my hands on. I always say, you know, I was good at everything and great at nothing. But I just love being around it. And it's interesting, though, once you're around it, and I'm sure you can attest to this, when you're around it so much, it does lose its luster, I mean, you're never going to be that 12-year-old kid that just, you know, can't get enough watching. See, I grew up in Michigan, so like the Pistons or the Tigers or whatever, I loved watching them. But, you know, now it's like if we're at a gig and they're playing, I might sit in the tunnel and just be like, I'm good. I'll wait till the show, because you're also focusing on work. But there's something about music, too. I mean, I'm very, very fortunate in that I'm able to marry two things that so many people love each of them, and so many people love both of them. So being in the middle of all of that, it's really unique. And you know, there's something about music that just it moves people in ways that, and so does sports.
You know?
I mean, both of those have such passion behind them, and to be able to combine, you know, when we had the Avett Brothers do a show in Atlanta, the first one we did was in 2011, and there were so many comments about, oh, you've combined the two things I love the most, the Braves and the Avett Brothers, right? So with them being Carolina boys, they're kind of in Braves country anyway. But so I don't know. I'm not answering your question there on purpose. But, you know, I grew up a sports kid.
Yeah.
I always loved music, but, you know.
Well, the cool thing is that you get to play in both.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you know, I relate to that too, is, you know, I worked in the movie business for you know, majority of my life, but I also worked in advertising.
Yeah.
And, you know, so what we do, you know, in our company is we essentially marry the two. One of the companies that I own, we marry the two, is we marry advertising in the movie business.
Right.
So it's kind of cool that you're able to live out that on both sides of what you really enjoy.
Yeah, it's nice. Well, and you know, you've got to balance everything too. So whether it's, you know, balancing the artists and the teams or balancing work-life stuff, you know, my wife would probably tell you I don't do that well enough at times.
Yeah.
But, you know, having somebody at home too that I mean, she's amazing.
Yeah.
Like we've got two kids. Like, I'm gone. I'm on the road a lot. I know that's tough on her. Yeah. It's tough on the boys.
How do you balance that? How do you usually?
I don't. Yeah. That would probably be the easy answer. Yeah. Luckily, I'm home a lot when I'm home.
Yeah. Turn off the phone and.
Yeah. Well, honestly, I never do. I never do because if I turn it off, then the company's off, right? But you know, you try to make your time. Quality time when you're around, but you know, it's being fortunate enough to have the wife that I have. Mm-hmm. It's huge because I know I can go out of town for a couple of days and I know the boys are going to be good. They're going to be fine. Like, you know, but it is tough.
See, that's an interesting topic that like the whole work-life balance.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just one man's opinion, but I believe the work-life balance is different for each individual leader.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
Because like everybody has a different scenario, situation, home life, you know, and I think balance is important, but it's going to
vary. Find your own balance.
You find your own balance. And I think that, you know, once you can do that, you can operate more effectively as a leader once you've got that balance down and, you know, you just know yourself.
Well, and then it's just like the job. It's knowing what's coming. Hopefully no surprises. You try to get some sort of pattern or at least a rhythm going so everybody kind of understands how things are going to play out at home.
Right.
But as, you know, the boys get older, they're going to understand that I'm gone a little bit more and they know it's going to be a little more difficult and they start playing sports and all the stuff I want to be there for, I might miss some of that.
Right.
I know I'm going to miss some of that and that'll be tough. But to your point, I mean, yeah, it's absolutely different for everybody. If I was 10 years removed and, you know, no family, I probably, you know, who knows? I it would be different, but I'd also probably be a maniac running around having fun too.
I probably
wouldn't be as focused on work as I am.
Yeah.
So, it's tough, but it's so different for everybody. But.
So kind of closing out here, if you were to give one piece of leadership advice to somebody out there that's trying to start their own thing, what would it be?
Be wildly lucky and find good people to surround yourself with.
Yeah.
I mean, really, I'm really fortunate in that. You know, obviously my wife, that's one piece of it, but my production manager. And then, you know, it's really just try to do right by everybody. You know, as simple as that sounds, a lot of people don't. You know, they're just trying to squeeze people here or there, do something that maybe they wouldn't want people to know or be proud of or whatever. If you're doing right by people and you're just enjoying what you're doing and you're happy to be around the people that you're around, I think it means everything because people will want you to come back even if maybe one of our shows doesn't go so well. I hope that the people that I'm working with, they're almost friends more than they are clients. And I hope they want us to come back, you know, and you want to treat it like that. And I try to take those relationships like that more so than anything. Because I don't want to go in and be on my toes the whole time as a, like looking at them as a client too. I want to relax and have fun with them and talk to them. And I mean, that's my life.
Right.
I'm out on the road and I have some buddies out on the road.
Yeah.
So I try to keep it in that direction.
That's great advice. Yeah. Always do the right thing.
Yeah,
it's the right thing
for
do.
Sure. Yeah.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning into the episode. If you guys enjoyed it, show some love, give me a thumbs up, and subscribe. Also, make sure you check out our exclusive C-Level group on Facebook.